Mud Podcast presents.
And on the web, you're listening to us at KMUD.org. And now it is time for Heart of the Earth. Good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other Indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes and I'll be with you until 10 a.m. And support for KMUD comes from Soham Health, Garberville Optometry, now serving Southern Humboldt with its mobile optometry unit, offering eye exams, screenings, and treatment for eye-related conditions. Glass fittings and contact lenses are also available, and they're open Tuesday through Thursday behind Garberville Pharmacy. More info at sohamhealth.org/optometry or 707-923-3921. And... Support for Kmart also comes from Dead on the Creek Festival, August 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Black Oak Ranch in Laytonville, featuring Jerry Garcia and Grateful Dead-inspired music, camping under the stars, farm-to-festy meals, and family-friendly activities. Musical lineup includes Stu Allen and Mars Hotel, Hayden Wolford and the High Beams, Brown Eyed Woman, Broken Compass Bluegrass, and more. More info and tickets at deadonthecreek.net. All right. Well, last week I was trying to play a little piece from the long interview that I did with Leonard Peltier that really needs to be heavily edited. But I finally got it working today, so I'm going to play this. It's only about 5 or 6 minutes long, but it's so beautiful to hear his voice. My voice is much louder, so I'm going to try to, you know, make it all happen so you can hear it really well. Again, I visited Leonard Peltier, who was in prison for 50 years for a crime he did not commit, and they know he did not commit. And he was finally released around February 20th or so, after President Biden signed an order to release him on all these conditions, but they finally did release him. And he's at home in North Dakota, and he considers himself living in this beautiful mansion. You know, it's just like maybe about, at the most, 1,000-foot square house, just has a little kitchen, a little dining room, and a living room, and a bedroom. But to him, you know, after being in a prison cell for that many years, he just considers it a beautiful home that was bought for him by the people. And so let us hear Leonard Peltier. Oops, where did it go? Now I just bumped it. Oh, no. How could that happen? Okay. All right. Well, I think I bumped it and I made it go away. So by the time I will play it, I bumped it, and I have to have it at a certain point. So I'm just going to play it later on in the show, but I will definitely get it back to where I have to reset it. So what I want to, I will start with is, you know, I wanted to read this last week before Reggae on the River, but just works just as fine afterwards, because I know that there are booths and they have the sacred sage and they wrap it up and they sell it. It's medicine to the people, but they sell it. And it's disgusting. And of course, I saw one place had a big basket with all, you know, all beautiful. Oh, sage, burn your sage, you know. And it was like, really? Really? You charge for that? So this is really wonderful. It's from Julia Francella, who does a podcast with Simon Moya Smith, a native podcast, and it's called Sage and Smoke, A Deer's Quiet Blessing, The History of Outlawed Ceremonies, and what it means to carry this medicine today. And she says, the prairie on Gordon First Nation Reservation stretched wide under the summer sun, the air sharp with the clean scent of sage. Thunderbird Woman and I moved slowly through the plants, crouching down, offering tobacco, speaking our thanks as we gathered. You don't rush when you're picking medicine. You take only what you need. You leave it strong so you can come back. And then Wawa Shikisha came. The deer stepped out of the trees, still and watchful. Then another. In our teachings, the deer carries gentle medicine, a reminder of love, humility, and the quiet strength of being present. For deer to come again and again felt like a blessing, as if the land itself was acknowledging the work we were doing. My family are of the Eagle Clan from the Northern Ojibwe, Batchewana First Nation. My name is translates to brave deer woman standing strong from the earth, and moments like this remind me what it means to carry that name. I also think about what it means to do this harvesting openly. In 1876, the Canadian government passed the Indian Act, and by 1885, it explicitly banned, quote, any Indian festival, dance, or other ceremony. And by 1895, those caught practicing faced jail or 6 months of withheld rations, a devastating punishment when rations meant survival. Smudging, sun dances, giveaways, and even funerals were driven underground. For 75 years until 1951, practicing our ceremonies openly risked arrest. In the United States, the same was true. The Code of Indian Offenses of 1883 declared indigenous ceremonies heathenish, banning medicine men and dances with imprisonment or rations cut as punishment. And it wasn't until 1978, with the passage of the American Indian Religious Freedom Act, that indigenous people could legally hold ceremonies again. That's less than 50 years ago. For generations, ceremony was done in secret, often at night, sometimes disguised as social gatherings. Elders still talk about whispering songs so authorities wouldn't hear. That's how close we came to losing these practices. Every time I touch a sage plant, I think of that history. Sage is not a plant to burn because it smells pleasant or feels calming. Sage is prayer. It's cleansing. It's a conversation with the spirit world, a way of purifying ourselves and releasing negative energy to make space for good energy. It's medicine. And it's becoming harder for indigenous families to access. White sage, especially, has been stripped from the land to meet the demand for mass market, quote, smudge kits. Thousands of pounds have been poached from protected areas in recent years, and indigenous harvesters are stepping back from traditional gathering grounds to give the plant time to recover. I've been receiving questions lately from readers and listeners, quote, where can I get sage? Who sells it responsibly? It's a good question because it means people are trying to approach this medicine with respect. My answer is simple. If you can, learn to gather it yourself, slowly, carefully, with gratitude. If you can't, seek it from native harvesters and businesses who treat it as medicine, not a trend. Among our people, medicines are not bought and sold casually. They are gathered with care and given and received in community. A caller on our radio segment shared a story that stayed with me. He had gone to Indian Health Services for treatment for the first time and said he was treated well. But what struck him most happened as he was leaving. The security guard, yes, the security guard, smudged him with sage, just quiet smoke curling around him. He said it moved him deeply that even the security guard would offer this small gesture of healing. That's what sage does. It lifts some of what we carry, fear, grief, the weight of what's ahead, so we can face it with a steadier heart. We can use it to cleanse ourselves, to prepare spaces, to clear the way for what is needed. Sage was once something our people risked, arrest to protect. I will read that again. Sage was once something our people risked arrest to protect. Today, it's sometimes poached for profit, sold in plastic wrapped smudge kits, and treated like a trend. For us, it's still what it's always been: prayer, cleansing, ceremony, survival. The security guard who smudged that man at Indian Health Services understood that. So did my ancestors who whispered songs in secret while the law tried to silence them. We owe it to them and to the land itself to treat this medicine with the same respect they did. The sage in my medicine bag is from that day on the Gordon Reservation. Some I'll keep, some I'll share, and some I'll hold onto for the moment someone needs that same quiet kindness before stepping into something hard. Because that too is medicine. And when I visited Leonard Peltier, I made sure that I had white sage to give him because I know how much white sage is appreciated in the Dakotas. So thank you. I really, really, really want to thank Julia Franchella for sharing that story, because, like I said, I knew I was going to find it for sale at some booth at Reggae on the River, and indeed, I did. That was Rebecca Belmore, high-tech TP mama from a great CD, Till the Bars Break. Boy, that was put out sometime, I think, in the late 80s, early 90s, but still relevant today. So I have, hopefully I have this correct now. And I'm going to share with you some words from Leonard Peltier. And again, this was right at the closing after we spoke, and I asked him if he had any words that he wanted to share. The one thing he said, just let him know, man, that blanket was badass, man. I just loved it. And I guess he almost wants to hang it on the wall instead of using it. But
would you like to say something, you know, to the community here?
I don't know how much you'll put out of our conversation here today. I know you'll do some editing, and I hope you do, because there's certain words that I shouldn't be speaking. I got to understand. I got to be more a little bit more sophisticated when I do these interviews, but I can't help myself, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to change completely. But I just inside, I got an anger in me that's. I wonder sometimes how I control it, how I'm able to control it, and. I'm positive this will be me for the rest of my life, but I'm very grateful to all you people out there that have supported me all these years, helped keep me alive, and when I needed a little help financially, you contributed what you could, and made sure that I had commissary monies and anything I was allowed to get, which was very little, but it was not a country club. I want people to understand that. Not in the prisons I was in. The prisons I was in were extremely dangerous, and the treatment was getting worse and worse as before I left prison. They were cutting back all the gains we made over the years and trying to get prisoners' rights and stuff like this. So the only positive thing we got going right there on the prison system right now is that, and unbelievable, this put in by Trump, is the assistant co-director of the Bureau of Prisons is an ex-prisoner. I happen to have been in prison with, and perhaps it'll get a little easier, but I want people to understand something. We're all talking about we should get all the prisoners turned loose and everything like this. There are some prisoners in here that that I don't even want them to come within a mile of me. These people have killed children, babies, and things like that. I don't want them in my neighborhood. I don't want my children and my neighbor's children to be in jeopardy of that stuff, because these fuckers are sick, and we're going to try to get them out of prison. I'm not into that. Now, there is some prisoners that should be helped to get out. There's quite a few of them that I will support and stuff like this, but... there's some of them, I'm telling you, don't go that way. Don't try to get those there. But otherwise, I will be around for a while. I think I can get my medical problems treated. I might need some little help on that eventually, because I don't know how long Medicare is going to last. I might need some help from people, but... maybe you can buy some prints and stuff from my paintings if you can't afford a painting. That will help pay for all that stuff. Otherwise, I'm going to be in the forefront. I'm going to be speaking my mind. And I'm going to be speaking for you, the people, no matter what they do or what they try to do. I will be there till my natural death, I hope. So thank you all. See you soon, hopefully. And thanks. Thanks again. Thank you very, very much. Doksha. One of the things I as most people know by now, that I'm on a very restrictive conditions here to live in my home. Even though I'm living in a very nice house that was bought for me by the people. Not the tribal councils. No, this was bought by the people. So the government can't say they bought and through the tribal funds. But all the furniture and stuff, and that was all bought by the people. They chipped in together and helped buy me this house and furniture and everything else like this. I want people to understand that. And people are passing rumors that I'm a millionaire because I got this nice house and all this stuff. That's not true either. So please, Don't listen to that crap. But I don't know how long I can. They're saying that I will be on these restrictions until 2040. Well, that's the end of my debt. We are going to file lawsuits to get all these restrictions off of me. And I'll probably need help on that. So I just met last week with one of the lawyers of the team of lawyers I got going. And you should hear about us because it should be pretty active now that I'm out of prison. So stay tuned for chapter two. Doksha.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
Free to pursue their own destiny. Free.
All right. That was Rod Deal. And I played that because I can't begin to tell how many people have come up and told me how much they appreciated hearing that when I played it last month. And could I play it again? So I did. I'm going to share this one story with you, and then I'm going to make sure I have enough time to do it. I'm going to share with you I'm going to read it. It's one of the last interviews that John Trudell did before he passed on. In fact, he did it 5 months before he passed away, and it's just so important today as it was when he said it 10 years ago. But first, I want you to know, and this was published just before, days before. All the community radio stations lost their funding, but I thought it was important for you to understand that dozens of Native American radio stations across the country, vital to tribal communities, will be at risk of going off air if Congress cuts more than the $1 billion from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, according to industry leaders. And they did lose it, and now the Republicans want to completely disband the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which just I really don't understand. All right. Well, the U.S. Senate was set to vote, on whether to approve the Department of Government Efficiency's plan to rescind previously approved public broadcasting funding for 2026 and 2027. Fear is growing that most of the 59 tribal radio stations that receive the funding will go dark, depriving isolated populations of news, local events, and critical weather alerts. The House already approved the cuts last month. Quote, for Indian country in general, 80% of the communities are rural, and their only access to national news, native storytelling, sharing community news, whatever it is, it's through PBS stations or public radio, said Francine Blythe Lewis, the CEO of the Lincoln, Nebraska-based Native American video programming producer Vision Media Maker. Quote, if the clawback happens, I would say a good 90% of those stations will cease to exist. And I mean, I was telling someone yesterday, I remember one of the first times I ever heard Keeley Radio about 20 or 30 years ago, and I had it on, you know, and they were playing some music, and then, you know, the announcer came on and he said, hey, Joey, go pick up your Auntie May. She's in front of the store waiting for you. You know, I just like, yep, community radio on the res. Well, local radio plays an outsized role in the lives of many who live in indigenous communities where cable television and broadband internet access are spotty at best and non-existent for many. That leaves over-the-air TV stations, usually a PBS station, more often local radio, to provide local news, community events, details, and music by indigenous artists. Sometimes the news is delivered in indigenous languages. Quote, it means we're not going to hear our language on the radio, Blythe Lewis said. Flagstaff, Arizona-based Native Public Media, which supports a network of 59 radio stations and three television stations serving tribal nations across the country, said about three dozen of those radio stations that rely heavily on Corporation for Public Broadcasting will be the first to go dark if funding is cut. Well, Loris Taylor, CEO of Native Public Media, said in an op-ed that the tribal stations reach more than 1.5 million people and, quote, may be the only source of locally relevant news, emergency alerts, public safety announcements, language preservation, health information, and election coverage. GOP senators are under pressure from President Donald Trump, who promised last week on his Truth Social Media that any Republican who votes against the cuts, quote, will not have my support or endorsement. And many Republicans say the public media system is politically biased and unnecessary expense. And Senator Eric Schmidt, a Republican from Missouri, recently defended the cuts as necessary to hack away at the nearly $37 trillion national debt, adding, it is critical in restoring trust in government. And every time I hear that $37 trillion, they made all these cuts, but the debt went up. Why? What pockets are they filling? But some Republicans have pushed back, such as Maine Senator Susan Collins, who questioned the proposed cuts last month during a Senate committee hearing, but she still voted for it. She said that while some of the federal money is assigned to National Public Radio and the public broadcasting system, most of it goes to locally owned public radio and television stations. And Jacqueline Sally is president and CEO of the Koenig Broadcast Corporation and KNBA, its radio station in Anchorage, Alaska. The Koenig produces national native news, a five-minute daily newscast that features headline news from across Indian country, and Native America Calling, a daily hour-long call-in program for about 190 stations across the nation. It also produces Indigify, a musical program in indigenous languages. And KNBA is on Native Public Media's list of those stations that will be most affected by the federal funding cuts, a concern Sally confirmed, as 40% of the station's funding comes from CPB. Quote, what we're really worried about are the rural stations in Alaska where they may be the only station in the community. The people that live there depend on the station for vital weather alerts, emergency alerts. It's the local hub of the community where people share information. So that is very troublesome because people's lives are at risk without this service. It's currently fishing season in Alaska, she said, which means getting out in the ocean or rivers and going long distances to subsist. And so they really rely on weather reports. And having the news reported in the tribal language isn't just about preserving that language, she said. Sally spent summers in Nome after her mother's family, with her mother's family. Her grandmother, she said, spoke only New Mexico's PBS's signal reaches all but one of more than 20 tribes and pueblos in the state. It also has signed an agreement with the Navajo Nation, which has the largest reservation of any tribe in the U.S. that allows the tribe to carry the PBS signal and programming on Navajo Nation's television network, New Mexico PBS said. Quote, it's no question in my mind that, you know, immediately some stations will pretty much go dark. And when those stations fail, it won't take long for others to follow. And as they do, it will mean fewer and fewer stations left to pay membership dues, so that it will also help fund all of the station. So now the whole system starts to fracture. So for me, he said, the federal funding is really about the system as a whole that keeps us in place. We're erased from public media, and therefore invisible, and therefore become unknown and unheard of. And I just wanted to share that with you. And I was going to play a song about Native radio, but I want to make sure I have enough time to share with you John Trudell. And this was an interview he did on July 23rd of 2015. Yes, 5 months before he passed away in December of 2015. And it says, you can learn a lot about a man in an hour-long conversation, particularly if you don't allow yourself to get bogged down by all the what-as, could-as, should-haves, or any of your preconceived notions. Such is the case with John Trudell. To many, he is a poet and philosopher, and overall, just a deep thinker. But he tries hard not to label himself. Quote, I don't know how to describe myself, he says. To me, I'm just me. Know what I mean? I'm me. I do what I do. Do I think? Yeah, I think. Do I think a lot? Do I write? Yeah, I write a lot. I go out and I speak a lot. But those are things that I do. But I don't identify myself as poet or a thinker, not as my identity. I'm just me, John Trudell. I write, I have a band, I make albums. These are things that I do, but I also call them my identity. Now, let's say because we need labels and we need a way to identify ourselves, I'll basically list myself as a writer, as an occupation. But my identity is John Trudell. I'm a human being. There was a time in my life when I was a political activist. There was a time when I was a militant or whatever. There was a time when I was an actor. These are things that I did, but my identity is I'm just me. I'm a human being. Trudell, the musician, has been busy on the music front. His band Bad Dog is due to release their latest CD, Wazzy's Dream.
Quote, it's being manufactured now, he explains. It'll be ready in about a month. That's the main thing artistically, work-wise. I don't know how to describe what I do. I say it's rock blues, and it's mixing of poetry and singing and music. I write all the lyrics, and then I speak. And then I speak them. I don't sing them, but everybody in my band is a singer, so we have singing. It's difficult for me to describe, but it's based around poetry. He's been busy collaborating with others as well. I wrote a song with a tribe called Red and this band, The Pines, out of Minnesota. I finished writing a song for them, and I'm looking at writing a song with A Scatter Their Own and Cody Blackbird at some point. Bad Dog is who I really work with, but I've gotten some opportunities to work with different artists, so I'm doing it because I enjoy it. Anytime I get this stuff out there, put to music, I enjoy it. Trudell says there is no process in his writing. It's just all sort of happens. Quote, I go through periods of time where I write quite a bit, and I go through periods where I don't write very much. But when I do write, when that does happen, a couple of lines will come into my head. What I'll call the hook lines, I guess. So I write them down, and I just find another line to go with those two, and I look for another line to go with those three, and that's what I do. I just add to it, line by line, with no real idea where I'm going. It all starts on the hook. In a way, that is a process. I think it's kind of like beadwork and painting, you know. You meditate and think. It's a lot of time, so you're creating. I think writing is habit-forming, energetically speaking. It's calming. It's a balancing of my energies. During the periods where I'm writing a lot, I do that every day. And when I'm in a slow time, I'm rolling with that. I don't have a problem with that. I look at that like it's replenishing the well. That seems to be how it's worked for me for the last 35 years. Time passes. People change. For Trudell, that is an important artistic phenomenon. Quote, I see an evolution of thought and an evolution of communication, he says. I wouldn't want to be writing the same thing now as I did 30 years ago. I wouldn't want to be the same as I was 30 years ago. For me, it doesn't fit because I'm not the same as I was 30 years ago. I had a whole lifetime of experiences. I want that to show in my art. I knew what I started. I wanted there to be an evolution because I know how limited I was when I started out as a writer. It's like our ideas and attitudes. We have these perceptions. Let's say when we're in our 20s, that by the time we get into our 40s or 50s, our whole attitude has changed. We've lived and we've learned things. He hopes to publish another book this year and offered some thoughts about what's been on his mind recently. Quote, I think that we as Native people need to be very careful, he said. I think as Native people we need to be careful about how we identify ourselves. I think we really need to look into ourselves and start identifying as human beings and start thinking like human beings. Because whatever's coming politically and economically and socially, it's bringing more hard times for everybody. And when I look at Native country, I see high teenage suicide and a poverty and the violence. You see all the negative parts of the statistics, and it seems to be spreading more. We need to look at the respect, and it ain't enough to just say it. We really need to look at and understand responsibility. We can say these things, and we say them all the time, but we really need to understand it and incorporate it into our daily living. When I see the chaos and madness going into this world, I think for us as Native people, we need to reclaim our memories. We need to reclaim our identities as human beings to survive whatever the future is bringing. I'm an old man now. Counting womb time, I'm 70. I'm on my way out, and I don't have a problem with that. That's natural. But when I look at my descendants or young people, I just kind of think we have to reclaim our memory. The genocide of civilization is there to erase that memory. We don't remember we're human beings anymore. That's why there's all the false prides. That's why there's the drug use, the alcoholism. There are symptoms of it. It's the genocide itself. It's denied itself. It's the genocide that created these conditions. We've forgotten that we're human beings and we're passing this diseased perception of reality amongst relatives. We really need to look at who we are. It's not enough to say that I'm a traditionalist. It's not enough to say I can speak the language. It's not enough to say we're all about respect. It's not enough anymore. We have to understand what we're saying. We have to understand tradition, culture, sharing, and love. That's the way it was a long time ago. That was our way of life. We looked out for each other, but that's when we remembered who we were. Fast forward to now. There's more carnage from the poverty and the racism than there is in cohesiveness. We need to use our intelligence clearly and coherently as human beings rather than to use our intelligence emotionally as victims. It's all in how we perceive reality. Trudell goes on to speak on Native issues in regard to the educational system. He says, I find the term diversity interesting because it's been around for a while as a solution to the problems we're confronted with. It's like language as an illusion. They're still programming the same old genocidal perception of reality. There's no diversity of what we're learning. The problem we're confronted with is the educational system itself, and it is the structure of the economic system itself. That's the problem. When we talk about diversity for these other things, it's really kind of meaningless. In the whole spectrum of diversity, they mean the ones that they're going to be able to fit into the system to make it run as it is. But the situation is what it is. The best thing that we can do is bring as much clarity as we can because it's institutionalized. The institutions don't really get it. They're going to do it in the way that serves their purposes, not the way that serves our purposes. The thing about creating these courses in Native American history and how they're approaching it, they can't tell the truth. So they got to come up with these things because they can't really tell the truth about what happened. They can create noble images of us, or they can create the noble red man or the victims of genocide and this and that, but they don't even really get into that. They talk about treaties. In reality, they can't tell the truth because they don't know what the truth is. So when they're going to do Native history, the best thing we're going to get in any institution is a certain degree of actual truth in history. There's a basic truth to what happened, but they're not going to teach it. They're not. The history of the Native Americans is they were victims of a racist mentality that is still prevalent, even though people want to pretend that it's not. Hey man, I don't want to say that it's all bad because I know there are many Native programs where real information is being given. But when you look at the institution of education itself, it's not allowed to really tell the truth. It has to be revised to fit the needs of the civilization. It's all done on purpose. It's designed to be this way. That's the deal for us as Native people. America being what it is, America's objective has always been to take what is ours. It has not changed, and it will not change, to take what does not belong to them. I think when we talk about Native history, we need to take it upon ourselves to communicate the truth the best that we can. But I don't have an answer to it. I don't have a solution. It always comes back to we have to think our ways through this. You know, we just got to outthink them. We have to really think like human beings and just accept the reality now. And the reality of now is that the system is unfair and it's not going to be fair. This system is designed to exploit and oppress. That's the way this civilization is built. That's what makes it run. So we need to recognize that. I think when we recognize recognize it and really understand that we will all think more clearly about how to deal with things. But the system is designed to oppress and exploit, and a part of that is designed to such a way that it offers hope. And you know what I mean? It offers hope that maybe you can change it. But the deal is, you can't. The way things stand now, we can't. I'm not saying that at some point we won't be able to change it, but the way things stand now, we can't, because we're not thinking clearly right now. We're emotionally traumatized and reactive. We need to get past the emotional trauma stuff and really understand the value of our intelligence. For Trudell, passion and purpose are innate, as natural as breathing. He says, with my lifestyle, sometimes I'm really, really busy, he says, and other times not too busy. I'm here. I was born into this dimension, to this dimensional reality, you know. I got to do something while I'm here, on my way to leaving. I have a certain appreciation. Everything is what it is, but there's still a point in this spirit. There is still a spirit in this world. There's still spirit here in the nature, here in the life. I'm not saying I'm the spiritual holy holy, because I'm not, but I feel a spiritual relationship to life, even during the darkest times. I guess maybe that's what it's all about. You get up the next day and you do what you got to do. So I just try to make as much sense as I can to myself on a daily basis. I'm here. I'm alive. So I'm going to live it the best that I can. That's my everyday motivation. I make it up as I go along sometimes. We can ask questions. We can talk to people to get the information that comes in the form of answers. But in the end, we have to define our own answers. That's just what I think about life, because my answers are unique to me as my experience. If I do come up with answers that make sense, that's cool. I want to make sense. Reality is, we have to find our own answers. John Trudell. And again, this was, he did this interview in July 23rd of 2015. He passed on in December of 2015. And he did write his book, and he put out another CD. It didn't come out to this past year. I've shared the book of poetry. He wrote a poem almost every day before he died, till 2 days before he passed on to the spirit world. He wrote poetry. And I didn't grab the book this morning because it was one of the poems I wanted to share. And I felt the urge to share this because it's so important that we remember who we are as human beings. They're doing everything to erase that from us. But when I see people day after day, 24/7, in Los Angeles, trying to stop ICE and protesting, they're remembering who they are as human beings and how we treat each other and to stand up for each other and protect each other. I saw somebody over the weekend at Reggae on the River. We hadn't talked in years. We'd had our differences. But we finally had our conversation. And in the end, I said, I'll always have your back. Don't worry, I'll have your back. And we have to reach out like that. Because the uglier it gets, the more positive and beautiful we have to make it. Even if you just go out to your garden and smile at the flowers or the food you're growing, that's who you are as a human being. To remember that natural world and give thanks every day that we live in the community that we live in. And yes, I saw a lot of, just a lot of goodness this past weekend. I'm going to close with Rebel Wise, and this was an elegy that he did for John Trudell, and I'll be back next week. And if you get a chance, get to the Garberville Library. You can see some of my Reggae on the River photos.
Put my Glock away. I got a stronger weapon that never runs out of ammunition.
There's nothing wrong with us except how we see or don't see. If we don't figure out something here or now, see, and we live in the right time and right place to meet the need of the evolution. If we understand that, then we will be up to it and we will meet that need, because we cannot control what's going to happen in the future. But how we use our individual and collective coherency will influence the evolutionary outcome of what this reactionary, non-thinking, exploitive, manipulative beast has in mind.
Put my Glock away, I got a stronger weapon.
We cannot outfight them. There may be times to fight, but we cannot outfight them, because they invented that kind of death. Through history, since they invented that kind of death, every provocation has been to get us at some point to try to outfight them. And so to me, it's like, no, in reality, we got to outthink them. We're surrounded in a reality where you have to have permission to think. That's called chain of command. They don't have permission to think. See, only a few get to think. See, this starts to equalize out the numbers. See, so if you really, really think about it, the guerrilla warrior of the future is going to be the one that thinks.
Put my Glock away, I got a stronger weapon that never runs out of ammunition.
We peep the allegory at the campfire listening. Elders share the stories of the vampire's victims. How do I not make the same mistake? Wisdom generate the vision, obliterate the prison. Molten lava, imminent terror. Tightrope walking over the caldera. Eras, ages, epochs and phases. Instruments and gauges in incremental stages. It's clear who engineered the fear and doubt. More than ears to decipher what you hear about. Zionist neurosis, scientific psychosis. Explore the folklore, hit a tell you that you chose this, exposed to the elements, fragile and delicate, so relevant. Development of agile intelligence, not tactical or practical to be on your back defenseless. Capital offenses actually prevents this. An instant telling me, common sense compelling me, self-defense extensive, existence is a felony. How much of the predatory is actually hereditary? Represent the truth, you're Garrett being evolutionary.
I got a stronger weapon, never runs out of ammunition,
Verbal alchemy when I'm spitting these rhymes. Vision to reality shifting in time. Breaking through the lies of these prison bars. Meditating in the hills, train my vision sharp. Now my tactics, guerrilla take action with principle. Dealing with a system where the prison is invisible. Dehypnotize, reveal the schemes. Who deal the fiends and seal the screams. And I feel the dreams of the matrix. I'm blazing mics and it rays a light through the dark phase in this maze of life. See through eyes with the sacred sight. With the guidance of the spirit through the ancient rites. A passage ways to rise how it's meant to be. From inside, realign with my memory. Activation, natural energy. Earth people unite to manifest with integrity. By way of life, represent 7G. So in my heart is the truth and remedy. Transform the pain, load up the clip. Now I even got love for my enemies.
I got a stronger weapon that never runs out of ammunition. Never runs out of ammunition. Never runs out of ammunition.
La gente se levanta. Se levanta diariamente. Libertad en sus gargantas. Claridades en sus mentes. Corazones bien cantando. Recibiendo, dando. Comandando. La Pachamamita vive. La Pachamamita vive. La Pachamamita vive, vive en nuestros vientres.
So life was about responsibility, and the earth was the mother. So somewhere in each and every one of us, there's a collective genetic memory that goes way back to the beginning of the original dream, the beginning of our stories. And our relationship to power in reality is connected to us understanding.
This has been a KMUT podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.